Howdy, Bunk.
Is this the beginning of the podcast?
This is the beginning of Panning the Stream, our podcast.
Yes. Hello. Hi. Boy, howdy indeed.
Yes, as we say to each other, and we always have for every episode of Panning the Stream, and always shall. There can be, I don't know how to do a thing with that.
There can be only one opening line.
There we go. Yes. How's it going?
It's going great.
Yeah? I'm really glad that with us recording here, it happened to be the time that our AC magically started working.
Yeah, what a miracle.
Yeah, it was getting real hot in here.
Although I still want to get it fixed because I suspect that once it's a oppressively hot day, it will decide to crap out again.
Yes, and that will be terrible. It was rough a couple of these times, like laying in bed and stuff and feeling all sweaty. I don't like that.
Yeah, we were slightly sweaty in bed. We really have it rough, Dan.
I got the right mind to go to the housing association. I don't know how real estate works. Who runs a, it's just the people that own an apartment place, right?
The property manager?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I
don't, no, what do you do? Continue. You don't have to cut that out.
I don't know where I was going to that.
Keep it pure. You don't have to be going anywhere.
I was trying to figure where my confusion lied. Because if you're a homeowner, you just own the house. If you're an apartment person, the landlord, well, there's landlords and there's supers.
Super, like, repairs, and that's, like, maintenance kind of
right.
thing.
Right. So they don't own anything, right?
No, I mean, they might own their own apartment, but...
Is Tom Nook a landlord?
Tom Nook is, like, the catch-all for... All the money flowing into your little island goes through Tom Nook.
Is he, like, a mob boss?
I think he might be connected.
Yeah? He's got his family.
Yeah.
Well, oh, yeah, he's an uncle, right? Timmy Tommy's
nephews? And he's a little raccoon. Don't raccoons have a reputation for being kind of, like, little bandits?
Mischievous?
Yeah.
Stealing stuff from trash cans
eating
and the like?
Pizza with their hands?
Does that happen a lot?
They have little hands, and they hold things like humans do, and then they eat it with their hands.
I know you are you're a big mark for anything where it's an animal holding something and munching on it.
I love seeing animals holding anything. I think it's really cute.
With, like, tiny hands.
Yeah, little tiny hands, little nubs.
But you also like it when animals munch on things. And yeah. So I think if they're holding something and munching on it, I think that's a big thing for you.
I found that the pinnacle of animals munching is when you give a dog a carrot, because they can't chew like how we chew. They can only open and close.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Listeners at home, if you have a carrot and you have a dog, get to it.
You are fond of giving carrots to our dogs.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah. We, what was the deal with, I was thinking about giving Razor, oh yeah, I was going to give Razor some bacon today, but he's getting a little heftier.
Yeah.
Or you vetoed that.
I think it's, well, partly I assume because it was simply in contrast to Gizmo being so tiny, he's a puppy, but when I recently took Razor to the vet for just the regular checkup, he was 19 pounds, which is about 4 pounds more than he was when I took him last year for a checkup. So
I thought it was just, like, a lot of things seem amplified now that we have Gizmo. Because, like, Razor seems bigger, grumpier.
Well, what's weird is Razor doesn't appear fat at all. It's just, like, he's gotten bigger, which is a strange, like, late growth spurt, if that's the case.
Is he big for Cavalier?
So, well, he's definitely on the high end of the range for Cavalier. He's not, like, preposterously large for a Cavalier, but I'm trying to be careful with what I feed him.
Gizmo seems tiny. He is a puppy though, so that it will probably not be permanent.
Yes, puppies are small.
Yes, almost across the board.
You heard
smaller
it here on
large dogs.
Stream.
Yes. We learned what a landlord is. We learned that puppies are small. Things that come out of the fridge are frequently colder than when you first put them in.
And question for you.
Yes, go ahead.
Who wants to live forever?
Oh, boy. The queen. The queen in this movie, Highlander. First of all, there's a lot of things to talk about with Highlander.
Oh, my God, yeah.
That song, my only association with that song was from college. You know Ben. We went to his wedding in Kansas.
I do, yes. Pleasant fellow.
Yes, me, him, his cousin, and a bunch of other dorm room ne'er-do-well rascals in the dorm sneaking some 40s of Mickey's in. And we were all trying to beer bong 40s. And I have footage of this. And Who Wants to Live Forever is playing in the background because I think they're playing like a Queen Greatest Hits. And I remember it really tickled Ben that we were doing the dumbest thing in the world set to this, like, very epic, like, love song thing by Queen that I'd never heard before. And so I always, whenever I hear Who Wants to Live Forever, I think about beer bonging 40s, which, no, it plays during a touching scene.
Yeah, I'm forever going to think of Connor McLeod and his wife, Heather.
Yes, yes, the
tragedy. Scottish Highlands.
Yes, Highlander.
Highlander.
You had heard of this before, right?
I have heard Highlander. I didn't know a ton about it. Going in, I just had a broad idea of what it was about, like this immortal thing. There can be only one. There can be only one immortal, and you have to behead the other ones. That's all I knew. And man, this is another one of those movies that's like, I can't believe, especially in regards to you, I can't believe it took you so long to see this movie.
I had heard about it. I think we had them on VHS growing up, but I just thought it was like a fantasy thing, and I was never a fantasy
fan. And it is
fan.
Very, very like sci-fi fantasy.
Yeah, but it goes really into like some sci-fi stuff. It's not just like, there are parts of it that are like swords and magic,
mm-hmm.
but then like a lot of it is just like cool fights in New York City, you know? Like I don't think I knew that part. I also didn't know it started with a Freebirds match at Madison Square Garden.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, it opens with a wrestling match. The first thing you see is a professional wrestler.
The first thing you see is Michael Hayes in Highlander. I did not expect him to come strutting out.
I love Freebirds match. And what I also loved is, obviously, another thing I knew about the movie was that Chris Lambert stars in it. And I love how, with that scene, they, like, panned across the audience, and then they just stopped on him and zoomed into him.
Yeah.
And they do this a few times in the movie. Just the idea that he's just a regular Joe that you wouldn't pay any attention to in the crowd, just nondescript looking, like, he's not like Kurgan, who's this, like, you can't not look at him because he's fucking huge and terrifying. Like,
yes.
He's just an average guy.
Yeah.
And he has this, like, by the end of the movie, obviously, in retrospect, he has this, like, 4-century history, and he's seen so much, and he's just this average guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that opening.
I think there is one tip-off, though, to him not being an average guy. Granted, he doesn't look like the Kurgan or anything like that, but I wouldn't trust anyone who laughs, like, ha-ha-ha-ha-ha.
Well, I'm saying more just, like, you'd be passing by. Having a conversation with him is very different. Like, yeah. I feel like He, aside from the sword fight in the parking garage that opens up the movie or immediately after the wrestling match, he is, like, apprehended by the police, and he gets interviewed by the police, and he's, like, immediately able to outsmart them. And, you know, he has this, like, nondescript accent. Actually, it was interesting. I learned that Christopher Lambert didn't speak any English before this movie.
Really?
Yes. And the crew was, like, shocked to learn that he didn't speak English. So he,
I had no idea.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he's got a very noticeable accent and everything.
Yeah, I thought the accent was like, well, it makes sense because he's lived all over the world.
Yeah.
So when he's in the police station, especially, I love this one moment where, like, he's telling the detective that, like, he doesn't know who this guy is. And then the detective asks, like, a leading question that would kind of prove that, if he answered it, that would prove that he did know who it was, but he's able to avoid it completely and sidestep it. Yeah, he's just outsmarting everyone because has over 400 years of experience.
Yeah, experience in combat and dealing with people, mm-hmm. and relationships.
Oh,
and
he's
authority.
So smooth with the ladies.
And, oh my God, the ladies love the Highlander.
Oh, Connor, you could do that to me all day.
Yes. Hope you enjoyed that clip of the movie we just played. So yeah, I love the beginning because we don't know all the rules yet of the Highlander.
Mm-hmm.
So he's just a dude at MSG watching wrestling.
Yeah.
Goes to leave. He has
parking
garage. He's got a huge sword in his, like, weird coat.
He's got a trench coat, yeah.
And then this dude who looks like a businessman, his name is Aman Fasil. He is one of the immortals, mm-hmm. but we don't know that at the time.
Mm-hmm.
But he starts doing, like, endless gymnast backflips and stuff.
Oh,
they have
gosh.
A sword fight.
He's doing flips where it would make far more sense to just, like, run.
Yeah, it's like an extended scene. Like, you know that scene in Holy Grail where the guy keeps running at the camera,
mm-hmm.
and every time it cuts back, he's still doing it?
Mm-hmm.
I felt like there was a scene where he's backflipping where it's like, dude, all right.
Calm,
like,
down.
Yes.
Yeah.
But yeah, the sword fight, and then Aman gets his head chopped off.
Yes.
And the first quickening happens before we know what a quickening is.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the moment I realized I was going to love this movie.
Yeah, this was great. Like, essentially, after you, if you're an immortal and you decapitate another immortal, that's the only way to kill these guys. You do that, and then there's the quickening, which is like a transfer of power from one immortal to the next. So I assume that means that whenever you're an immortal and you kill another one, you get more powerful.
Yeah, and the Kurgan was the most powerful one because he had, like, just killed a ton of people over hundreds of years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what happens during the quickening is, like, there's this wave of power, and, like, windshields from cars are exploding, the tires are deflating, the ground is shaking, there's this, like, light and wind, and Connor McCloud, yeah, the Highlander's, like, arms are just raised, like, yeah, it's like being struck by lightning, it looks like, yeah.
Oh my God, I'm just so into it because he's just in this normal looking parking garage and then just this like apocalyptic crazy things happening with all the cars freaking out.
Yeah. And that's like immediately I was even made me more interested in the movie. Like, obviously, that was a cool part. But just the prospect of it setting up this movie, like it was going to show you this kind of fantastical story. And a lot of it would be set in like the modern or contemporary times.
Yeah, I think that's one of the cool hooks that I didn't realize about this movie is that it does hop back and forth. And I'm into both of it. I like the lore of the Highlander, but I also like the main plot of like the gathering happening in the present day, which, by the way, you said early on when we learned like the rules of the Highlander or the Immortals, you were like, man, I hope it's not just constant battles. I hope we get to see what it's like just for him living as an immortal in the present day. Yeah. And that's what this movie is.
Yeah, I thought, well, you know, the one way they could lose me on this movie, if it's just nonstop fighting, like him just getting all these challengers, just nonstop fighting, that would I would lose interest. But yeah, it's not like that at all.
No, he's got an alias. He's working as an which nice touch. He's working as an antiques dealer named Russell Nash. And of course, he has all these antiques in his awesome apartment. Mm-hmm. He has that weird like throne room with like all of these prizes from people from across the world that he's bested in battle. Yeah. Like, what a cool room. He needs to clean that fish tank, though.
Oh, yeah. I was very confused, but in contrast to how nice his apartment was, that his fish tank looked a little dirty to me.
Yeah, it's very green.
Yeah.
So let's go over just the rules of immortality. I think that we thought going in, correct me if I'm wrong about you, but I thought that Highlanders were the immortals. Mm-hmm. I thought that like he was a Highlander, you know, and like, oh, that him and everyone else, the Kurgan, they're different Highlanders. But that's just the name of one. That's right. He is the Highlander. There is the Kurgan. There's Ramirez, who is Sean Connery, right, with a flawless Spanish accent.
He's awesome. Yeah. And there's obviously the guy that was killed in the parking lot. And then a guy that we meet a little later.
Castigar.
Yeah. We meet him briefly. But yeah, so there, it seems like these immortals, just this group of immortals, correct me if I'm wrong, just not based at all on any of the lore that extends beyond this movie, just in this movie in a vacuum, because I know there's so much Highlander lore.
Yeah.
But it seems like it's kind of random who gets to be an immortal or not.
Yeah. They don't really spend a lot of time explaining, like, the origin or what causes someone to be one. Like, so when we meet Ramirez, who is Connery, another one of the immortals, he's kind of explaining this to MacLeod.
By the way, I love that so much. When they do it when they flash back and Connor first meets Ramirez, and Connor's still, like, not entirely sure what's going on with him. All he knows is that, like, he survived this wound that should have killed him. Mm-hmm. His whole village turned against him because they thought he was, like, the work of the devil to keep him alive.
It's a very Jon Snow thing. He kind of comes back to life and it's like, whoa, what evil magic is causing this?
Yeah, you know? So they essentially try to kill him, but he's saved by one of the townspeople.
They like give him mercy and just let him leave or whatever.
Right, but he's still really confused about what's going on. He doesn't know yet that he's immortal. And then Ramirez comes along, and like Ramirez, played by Sean Connery, amazingly played by Sean Connery.
Hell of an entrance, this giant peacock thing.
Oh my gosh, he looks like if Connor is like a level 5. This guy has prestiged several times at this
point. It's all like purple gear that he found after killing enemies. It's all like rare level
stuff. Yeah, it's like kind of army crew. Only get in raids. Mm-hmm. Like,
looks amazing.
It's amazing. And he's been around for like
thousands?
Yeah, I think like he was around like BC era. He's just like an Egyptian guy. He says he's Egyptian. But it's so cool because his armor is like, you could tell the influence from all the different places he's seen. He carries a Japanese sword and like, you know, it's just so cool.
It's like creating a Soul Calibur character. It's like, oh, I want to give him this sword here and I'll put this cool hilt on it and all that. But it didn't matter if it matched up or anything. But it makes sense lore-wise why it would be a mishmash.
And he's just like a really fancy, like, really peacocky kind of guy, very flashy. But it's one of my favorite sequences in the movie where he's kind of teaching Connor the ins and outs of being immortal, what this means to him. Like, you could be underwater, you have to learn how to fight. You know, he tells him about this gathering that happened. He tells him about the quickening. Well, the gathering is actually kind of the driving force of the whole movie.
Yeah.
It seems like a somewhat random time. All the immortals have to get together, gather, if you will. And do battle, because at this point there can be only one, and they have to kill each other. Whoever's last man standing gets the prize.
Yes, which is infinite knowledge, basically, which could be used to, like, enslave humanity or to, like, foster peace and things like that. So they're super worried about the Kurgan winning because he's so powerful, but he's just evil as hell.
Yeah, and he's an immortal, so that means, like, an eternal darkness for mankind.
Exactly. He would never be able to be stopped. He would just roam the world, you know, enslaving everyone, killing everyone.
Right.
Which, oh, man, the guy that got to play it, I think his name is, like, Clancy Fox?
Clancy Brown?
That might be it. He looks so cool. Mm-hmm. Like, and he has different looks throughout the movie. Mm-hmm. Like, when we see him in the old Scottish Highland days, he's got this crazy, speaking of like legendary armor mm-hmm. type stuff, this crazy skull armor and everything, just looks like a beast.
Yeah.
And then later on, he's like the street tough mm-hmm. in New York City that's like driving this car and blasting rock, and he's got this huge scar across his neck. Is that from when he fought Ramirez?
Yeah.
And he didn't quite cut his head off?
Yeah, Ramirez, he ends up killing Ramirez when Connor is away. But he doesn't leave that battle without a pretty significant scar. And it looks like neck-related injuries are the only injuries that the immortals can really sustain, because those are the ones that are an actual threat to their life.
That's the Achilles heel, is the neck area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One last thing before we get off the Ramirez training montage entirely. I just want to say I really like the part, too, where he's teaching Connor how to like become in sync with the world around him and they see that deer and he's able to just like feel its heartbeat and everything and just gets really excited because that's like a new sensation, like being able to feel another being completely in that way. Yeah, I thought that was really cool.
I think it's so cool that like the lore of the Highlander they explain stuff to you and you kind of learn it with the Highlander, mm-hmm. you know, the rules of the immortals and everything, but they don't shove it down your throat and they don't over explain. Mm-hmm. I think there is such a cool mystery and lore to it, which I read a little bit about. Because everyone told me when I said that I love this movie, everyone's like, don't watch anything else. Don't watch sequels. Don't watch anything. Everything else ruins it. Mm-hmm. And I guess the second one is like considered one of the worst movies of all time. Highlander 2, The Quickening. And I guess in that, they really go into like, well, we need to explain the immortals started from this alien race. And they do this. It sounds terrible.
Yeah, I never want to see another Highlander thing. I just want to keep it pure.
I don't want to ruin it. Yeah, because as a standalone movie, it is killer. I think it might be the only movie we've watched for Painting the Stream that I gave 5 stars to on Letterboxd.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I just absolutely loved it. Close will let the right one in. We're on a good streak right now.
What you said about there being mystery, I think, is a huge part of it. It doesn't, like, lay it on too thick. Like, it's almost as if, like, we, the audience, is getting the information at the rate, like, that everyone else is. Like, we're not immortal, so we don't really know what's going on.
Yeah, totally.
But one of the people that does know what's going on and is immortal is Brenda, who's, like, works, seems to work for, like, the police.
Yeah, 1985, New York City.
Yeah, she sees McCloud when he gets, or I should say Nash, his alias, when he gets in police custody following the sword fight in the parking garage.
Which, by the way, I love at that part when he goes through the whole, like, quickening and all this crazy legendary immortal fight happens. And then he, like, real quick tries to hide his sword before the cops get there. Like, he's, like, flushing some pot down the toilet. He's like, oh, shit, gotta hide my, like, ancient sword.
Yes. Yeah. She seems to be someone that, like, actually the one competent person at the police station, because her presiding lieutenant, I don't know what you
call it. Oh, all the, like, bosses. Officer. They're idiots. Yeah, the guy that always has a mug and a cigar. Yeah.
He always looks so disheveled. And she seems pretty, like, aware of, at least vaguely familiar with, like, rumors of these immortal people existing, which makes sense because it's not like Connor's life took place in a vacuum. I mean, like, rumors would spread eventually.
Yeah.
You know, maybe people would be highly skeptical naturally, but, like, the fact is, like, this guy went through all these wars. He went through World War II. He went through Vietnam War. Like, and he's just been around and died so many times, but just come back. You know, it makes sense that word would get around that there's this kind of immortal race of people.
This, like, mythical, like, you would see writings of, like, oh, this man was shot in the back and came back to life, and mm-hmm. we saw him the next day, and it would, like, yeah, there would be rumblings, and especially if Brenda is someone that studies that stuff, that she'd be like, oh, wait, I've heard about this. This is real?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think she's a cool character.
Yeah, she's cool. She's not, like, I hate it when they did this in Broken Arrow, when there's a female character and they try to make it be, like, so obvious, like, just drumming that stupid drum of, like, oh, I can handle myself. Give me a gun. You know what I mean? It's just so fucking lame. Brenda's just, like, smart. She's got it together. She does, like, she's completely competent, but, like, not like, ridiculous about it. You know what I mean? She's really cool.
I think she's a well-written character, for sure. It's, like, I understand that this movie is kind of campy and hammy in some ways, but ultimately, I think it all works really well. It doesn't feel cheesy to me. Like, I was just into this universe.
Yeah, I totally agree. It was absolutely absurd, but I was, it just, like, went with it, and so I believed in everything it was doing. It sold it so hard. It was great.
Oh, man. I think maybe the scene that I was maybe at my most, like, this is fucking awesome, was when there was a duel in the past, in the Highland days, mm-hmm. between Ramirez, Sean Connery, and the Kurgan.
Right.
And it just looks like a Dio album cover. There's, like, this lightning storm going on, and they're, like, climbing these crumbling stairs across this, like, mm-hmm. thunderous sky. And, I just love the "There Can Be Only One" right before beheading, followed by a quickening, which is just, like, lightning and holding a sword, and just, like, with, like, the eyes rolling
so
back.
So cool.
I was so fucking into
it. It was
that.
Awesome. Yeah. I will say, I felt like one of the weaker aspects of this movie, and granted, it could have been just by the fact that it had a kind of a limited runtime. I feel like a movie of this scale could, like, deserve a 3-hour thing, you know what I mean? Just to see all the adventures of this guy.
Yeah.
But I feel like the one part that was kind of hamstrung by the lack of time was his relationship with Heather, his first wife.
Yeah.
I felt like, I'm glad we got to see that, and we got to see, you know, her withering and dying of old age while he's still young and is eternally 30 years old or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I felt like could have been more emotionally impactful if we would have seen more of that relationship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. I think they did do one really smart thing near the end of that story, is that we kind of see them after they've been driven out of the town and they're just living, like, in the mountains, mm-hmm. raising goats or whatever they do, that we see her from very far away. Mm-hmm. And she's, like, running to go see him. And, like, but you don't realize from far away that she's old.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was just a really subtle thing to do. It's like, oh, once she gets there, it's a close-up on her face. It's like, oh, she's old now. I get it. Okay, he's still young and everything.
Right.
And that's when – it's around this part where you get the "Who Wants to Live Forever" mm-hmm. thing of just, like – love stuff.
Yeah, it was sweet, but I feel like it could have been a little bit more impactful.
Yeah.
So as she's dying, she tells him, like, oh, light a candle for me on my birthday every year. Mm-hmm. And he still does that, like, obviously 300 years later, he's still doing that, which I thought was very sweet.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, Connery referred to this about, like, hey, you shouldn't fall in love. It's like, he said he had like 3 wives, and it's just like, this is gonna suck. Like, I mean, even if, you know, you love them every day they're alive, like, they are going to die and you're going to keep living.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just going to, like, weigh on you, basically. So, yeah, Connery had, like, 3 wives. It seems like MacLeod just had, what was her name? The wife?
Heather.
And then there's another relationship he has. It's not a romantic one, but they do a World War II flashback at one point, and they do it with the weirdest. It's the only time in the movie they do, like, a weird 3D effect transition,
mm-hmm.
where it's like there's an explosion, and because he's talking to Rachel, who works at his antique store.
Right, and she's, like, the secretary.
Yeah, and she's like, oh, all these cops and stuff are coming around asking what's up with you, and he, like, jokes, like, hey, just tell them I'm immortal, and then it does this, like, explosion mm-hmm. thing, and then they're back in World War II. And, yeah, she's about to get, like, killed by a Nazi, and MacLeod saves her and, like, basically, like, dives on her. But he gets shot in the back a bunch mm-hmm. and lives. And he tells her, like, oh, I'm not dead because it's some kind of magic.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets up, kills the Nazi. And then they just wind up being friends throughout all the years. And so, you know, 40-something years later in the 80s, she's working.
It's almost like a father figure to her.
Totally. Which is weird as she is, like, aging past right. him. It's an interesting relationship for sure. But yeah, she seems to be one of the very few people in the 80s that knows what's up with him.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just forever keeping the secret because he protected her. Like, mm-hmm. again, they don't spend a ton of time trying to hammer down what this is. But, like, what a fun little aside in another little interpersonal relationship.
Right.
That, man, it just does so many things really smartly.
Yeah. That's my favorite part of the movie, is just seeing him and his relationships and just, like, navigating the world and, like, lost. Another one of those moments where he's kind of just lost in the crowd is, like, right before he saves Rachel in the World War II vignette. He's just, like, running through the battlefield. They're not making him out to be this, like, insane warrior who's killing everyone and being a hero. He's, like, running, trying to avoid fire, just like I'm sure so many soldiers did.
Yeah, he's just a guy.
Yeah, he's just a guy, but he's actually immortal.
Yeah, and he was trained with, like, swords and horses and shit, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden he's, like, fighting Nazis with guns and stuff. Like,
yeah.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
Yeah. Did you know that the Kurgan is played by Clancy Brown? He plays Mr. Krabs on SpongeBob.
Oh.
Yes. So he's the Kurgan and Mr. Krabs.
Who lives in a pineapple under the sea?
Does Mr. Krabs?
No.
Oh.
But I think he's the one that sings that song.
Is he?
Oh, who lives in a pineapple? I think it's Mr. Krabs' voice.
Really?
I could be wrong.
I only know SpongeBob and the Starfish.
He makes Krabby
Patrick?
Patties.
Oh, okay.
He owns a Crab Shack. Yeah, Patrick.
Okay.
Patrick Starr.
So near the end, we get some good New York City stuff where he's just like hanging out in Central Park and like talking with another immortal friend of his that cast a gear, and they're just like sharing a drink on this bridge above that little canoe place that we went to in New York, Central Park, I think.
Yeah. I mean, you can really, I would love if I was an immortal to talk to another immortal, because like you've both seen so much. You've probably seen like different parts of so much of the world and just to relate to.
I feel like it's when I meet up with an old friend from college when I go back to Kansas, but it's like times a billion since that was just like 2 years in the dorms versus like centuries for these guys.
Right.
And it's just very much like, hey, remember when you were drunk and fought that guy in the 1700s and he stabbed you a million times during a duel? Like, and we see that. That's kind of a fun little flashback.
Yeah. I think one of the cool things, too, is like, obviously we see him have a lot of camaraderie with fellow immortals, except for Kurgan, obviously. But the relationships that he has, like, you see it with Brenda in the beginning, you know, he has to always be careful because he's not like them. And once they find out about him, like, how are they going to react? So in addition to living forever and losing the people that you do love, inevitably, you always have to contend with, like, once they figure out what the deal is with me, will they even see me the same? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's interesting to think about, like, the loneliness that he must feel.
Yeah, and they touch on that a bit. Again, without making it, like, they don't dedicate, like, 10 minutes of screen time to it. But, like, they get it into your head that, like, man, this guy's got kind of a sad life. Like,
right.
He's this great warrior and everything. But, like, it's sad. There's a sadness to him.
Definitely.
You know? So that Castigar guy, he winds up having, I love the scene with him and the Kurgan in this alley in New York, which by the way, imagine being the cops in like the NYPD in the mid 80s, where it's like, you're dealing with plenty of stuff anyway, just being cops in New York City. And all of a sudden there's a rash of sword fights and beheadings and like 7 feet guys and like lightning storms and stuff like that. They seem befuddled by it.
The part was really funny. There was this like tough guy driving around with a bunch of weapons in his passenger seat.
It's like a Vietnam vet with a bunch of just like, hey, fuck you, Russia.
He's going through this alley and he just like glances over and he sees these two guys sword fighting.
I think we both started laughing out loud because we just pictured this guy. Because he's like cruising around looking for a prostitute.
Yeah.
It's like a red light district thing. And so just imagine him just being like, oh man, I'm so horny. It's like, wait, what the fuck? These giant guys sword fighting. Oh, man, and that scene's real cool. So the two immortals, Kurgan and Castigar, fight. Not a big fight. Kurgan wins pretty easily, beheads Castigar. A quickening happens. And at some point during all this, the guy with the guns comes out. And like, what the hell's going on here? He seems really itching to shoot somebody.
Right.
And he starts shooting the Kurgan. And the Kurgan, what does he do? He, like, impales him with something, doesn't he?
Yeah, his sword.
Oh, yeah, he takes his big-ass sword and just stabs him.
He stabs him and, like, lifts him up on the sword.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he lifts him straight up. And then there's, like 40 witnesses to this where, like, a lightning storm is going on.
Oh, my gosh.
And so, like, the cops are trying to figure out, like, oh, we got him. It's got to be that Christopher Lambert guy. And so they show it to the guy who got stabbed. He's like, this is the dude, isn't it? He's like, no, trust me,
I
remember.
How the fuck did that guy survive, by the way?
I mean, he just got stabbed through the gut. He didn't make it a big old, like, slicey dicey.
I guess that's true.
He didn't turn the blade. As you've seen Face Off. Turn the blade, the wound won't close.
I feel like I feel like any impaling kind of situation usually results in death.
But... it's bad, but a sword is skinny. I bet you could get between some organs or just go through like Kurian one organ.
Kurian has a pretty beefy claymore. It's like I also love how they have different types of swords.
Yes, and his, like, he can like put in a suitcase and assemble in like a seedy hotel room. Yeah. Just like put together this giant sword and then cruise around New York City.
Oh, that reminds me of that awesome sequence, like before we really know what his deal is, when we see him in the hotel room and he's just like training and oh my god.
Oh yeah,
so
he's
cool.
In the, yeah, totally. He's just like sitting on the ground with the sword and like doing like a kata or something. And he plays it so well. The Kurgan is such a just like force of nature, of just chaos, of he's just pure evil. Mm-hmm. He's just driving around. Like at one point he kidnaps Brenda and is like driving through the streets and running over people and just laughing and just being a creep. He's like licking priests' hands and stuff.
I mean, he doesn't have to worry about dying. Like when he's speeding along with Brenda in the car, like he doesn't worry about getting the car crashed because it won't kill him.
No,
but,
he's
like,
actively,
she's terrified.
Yeah, and he's like mocking her. He's like driving like directly oncoming into a, like a cemetery. He's like, oh no, like, he's awful.
Oh, he's terrible.
There is a cool scene where they meet in a church before the climax, where
MacLeod
the Highlander
and Kurgan,
yeah, and I think that might be like because they said something about the rules where like Holy Land, you are safe. So I think they can't fight in
there. It's like the Continental in John Wick.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think the Highlander is like, I'll be outside. But also the whole fight they have in there is very just like drunk dudes at a bar. Like these two eternal warriors meeting in a church. I thought it was going to be this like, oh, this is this epic thing. But it's basically like, hey, I screwed your girls. No, you didn't. It was so weird that the Kurgan and the Highlander are like, hey, slept with the girl. But Kurgan apparently slips out a back door or something because he doesn't fight him in the church. This is when he kidnaps Brenda. Takes her to this place that I feel like I would have seen this when I lived in New York if it still existed. What was the sign? It's a big neon
sign.
Silver
Cup Productions or
It's like a Silver Cup Studios.
Yeah.
Is that still around?
I think so.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it's a cool...
It's in Queens.
Okay. It's a cool locale for this final fight because he like ties her up to this like neon sign and they're having just this really epic battle here and like like a water tower or something falls and so they can like go underwater and hide from each other and at one point like one by one the letters collapse and then they fall into this like warehouse.
There's
thing.
A lot of like the water's electrified.
Yeah.
So obviously they're being electrocuted. You'd see like the lightning bolts on them, but it doesn't affect them because they're, you know.
And it's that cool, like, old lightning that they used to do before CG, where it's like they had to, like, paint it onto the actual frames of the film. And it looks awesome.
It looks really cool.
Because they're literally just hand-drawn bolts of lightning coming off swords and stuff like that. It's really, really awesome stuff.
It's great.
And then, yeah, full-on warehouse duel at the end with swords. It's very suitably epic. And then, oh my god, he fucking... chops the head off the Kurgan, and I love the super close-up when you see his head start to, like come off, and then all this light just shoots up. And then it's one of those great quickenings.
It's the greatest quickening of them all.
I'm such a sucker for the quickening. So everything goes absolutely nuts, and then, like demons and stuff, like a vortex of demon faces and stuff are, like, lifting him up, and he's like, like getting all this, the prize is like, oh, it's so great. And then he just like looks kind of at the camera and he's like, there can be only one.
Yep.
And I, boy, I was into it.
Yeah,
extremely.
That was awesome.
This movie kicks ass.
Oh, it was so good.
Yeah.
So good. I was so into every little bit of that movie.
Oh my god. And then it ends with basically like him and Brenda move out to the Scottish Highlands and it's implied that he's not immortal anymore and that they're just going to like live together and they can have kids now. But yeah, since he has this infinite knowledge and can like basically read everyone's minds, he's like, "Yeah, I just want to make sure everyone gets along and like talk to government leaders and whatever and just end wars, I guess." So that's the implied ending. I guess with two, do you mind if I spoil what I read?
You know what? I don't, because I just want to keep it pure. I just want...
Okay.
Highlander is the only Highlander movie that exists.
Okay. It does sound like it basically ruins everything. Like, everything that was cool about it.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Yeah, but goddamn, what a kick-ass movie.
It was great. And I love that it was clearly intended to just be, like, a one and done. Like, it has a conclusive end.
Yeah.
You know? It was really cool.
There was a point where I turned to you. It was when, he was like, I think it was during like Who Wants to Live Forever and like him and Heather like rolling around kissing and stuff. And I was just like, I bet this movie was written by some fucking dorks. Uh-huh. Like the head was like, oh, he's the greatest. He's the magical, the Highlander, but he's also the great lover and the women love him. And it just felt like very D&D, like RPG, like they created this character and like he's awesome in every way.
Yeah. Yeah, he's really cool.
And Lambert, you know, he's, I feel like he's known for this role. You know, I don't really know him as anything besides this and Raiden from Mortal Kombat, which is what led us to this, because we saw him in Mortal Kombat. But there is a certain quality to Lambert and his delivery and his look and presence and everything. Mm-hmm. There is something like weird and ethereal, and like there's something off in a way that makes me buy him as a Highlander.
Right. Yeah. He doesn't, he's not like, he's obviously hardened by a great deal of life that he's lived.
Yeah. Like, I'm trying to think of an alternate history where, like, a 1986 Nicolas Cage, you know, played the Highlander.
You know what's a shame? I can't see a movie like this ever being, like, made. Like, completely original sci-fi. I know this had, like, a $19 million budget, and it did not do well at the box office. But, yeah, I wish that they would get more creative and, you know, do something wacky like this again.
It was a high-concept sci-fi. I feel like some stuff, like, I know you love Ex Machina. Annihilation was kind of out there, you know? Like,
yeah, I want to see Annihilation again. I feel like I didn't appreciate it when I first saw it.
Yeah, I think both of us weren't super hot on it at first, but honestly, the more I've thought about it, the more I was like, man, that was kind of a bold, crazy movie, you know? Like, I would totally watch that again. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this was awesome.
It's great.
Probably my favorite movie I've watched for Granny the Screen.
Oh, and I mean, goes without saying, since we already sang a little bit of it, goes without saying because we can sing it. The fucking Queen soundtrack. Yeah. I mean, like, icing on the cake.
Yeah, Princes of the Universe, like, opening this up. And it's all, like, because, you know, Freddie and Queen are very much, like, in that same way. Like, they're campy and cheesy and over the top and theatrical, but in a way that they sell it and they own it. And, like, they are not backing down from how, like, over the top their stuff is. And so it's such a great merging of them in this movie. Because, like, almost all the music is Queen. Mm-hmm. It's like there's like a weird New York cover they do at the end when the Kurgan's driving.
Yeah.
Like, it's so weird, but it fits so well, I thought.
It's great.
Yeah.
It's a freaking awesome movie.
Nice surprise.
Love Highlander.
Highlander is the best. That'll be it for our discussion on Highlander. But before we move on to the goodbyes.
But it will live on forever.
Forever, indeed. Also, forever is your love of all things Hugh.
Should we do the Hugh game? Don't we do it after the... We should do it
before. Do the thank yous first? Let's do this and then we'll get to the thank yous.
Let's do it.
All right. So, have you ever been caught red-handed doing something you weren't supposed to be doing?
Have you ever been caught red-handed? Have you? I know your famous story with the nun.
But that was when I wasn't doing anything
yeah,
wrong.
Yeah.
The one that I thought of when I read this was nothing really came of it. I was never a troublemaker. I was never, like, shoplifting, really. I was never, like, doing stuff that would get me in trouble for the most part. But one time when I was, like, 14 and working at the movie theater, I think I was working at the concession stand and somebody tried to pay with this $10 bill that had very clearly been altered. Like, they'd taken, like, a pen. It's a very hasty counterfeit job where they just kind of separated the 10, the zero, into two zeros. They kind of, like, drew it in and tried to, like, make it look as natural as possible, hoping that you wouldn't see the face and everything else about it. And I took it, and I was like, oh, that's crazy. They're giving me a $100 bill. And, you know, you do a million transactions a day when you're working at a point of sale. Mm-hmm. And I almost gave them change for $100. And I was like, wait a minute. And I was like, there's something weird here. And they're like, oh, sorry. They gave me something else. And I remember thinking, like, does that work? Could that work? And then, like, I remember thinking, like, well, if I got caught, I could just do what that person did and just be like, oh, sorry. Oh, weird. I didn't see that. And I remember trying to do it once. I did it on a $10 bill and I took it to Target, I think, like, late at night. And I just went to go buy something just to see if it would work. Mm-hmm. And, like, right away, the lady at the register was like, this is a What are you doing here? Like, I forgot how she phrased it, but she's like, what are you trying to pull here? And I was like, oh, and just, like, full on just, like, sweats and, like, oh, I didn't know. And I remember just, like, sitting in my car after, like, okay, I can never ever risk breaking the law again. That was way too terrifying.
Yeah, it's, I don't know if I've ever been caught red-handed. I remember when I used to, when I was a kid, my best friend was this girl, Ariana. And every time I would sleep over Ariana's house, it was dependably she would get screamed at by her grandma at some point because we were, like, making too much noise or whatever. And we were in the bathroom one time. We were just, you know, kids, so we would just be doing silly stuff all the time. And I found, like, a thing of what I thought was baby powder. And we were – you ever see those containers of baby powder that you're supposed to, like, squeeze and they have the holes at the top and it, like, comes out in a puff?
Like, yeah.
And we were like puffing this and like dancing around in the puff in this little haze of baby powder. And then we realized it was Vagisil. It was like a Vagisil powder for her grandma.
Oh, God.
And her grandma happened to be like walking by and just screamed at us for having a Vagisil party.
Dancing in her.
Yeah.
I don't even know what that is, but I can guess what it's for.
Yeah, it's something vaginal.
Oh, okay. Oh, those marketing wizards did it again.
Just two little girls just like dancing around.
Dancing in this dust of. Yes. All right. Mm-hmm. All right.
I tried to give a Hugh answer there.
Oh, yeah. Fair enough. Speaking of Hugh, I was trying to think of a segue, but I didn't have anything. So I'm just going to say the thing. Hey, thanks to everyone who. We have a Patreon. It's at patreon.com/paintingthestream. We keep it real simple. We got a $5 tier. $5 a month gives you an ad-free version of the podcast every single week.
Whoa.
Yep. It gets you episodes a day early. Get it Saturday instead of Sunday.
Oh, my God.
Uh-huh. And you also get, most importantly of all, your own Bonku.
A little special Bonku from me to you.
Ah,
thumbs up I'm doing.
Yes, she,
which
I saw it.
I'm narrating because it's a podcast.
Yes, but I can confirm she did give a thumbs up.
So this week, Daniel, we are honoring our friend Avrid, who is an avid listener of Panning the Stream.
Ooh, okay.
Avrid, I hope I'm saying your name correctly. If not, please forgive me. I really hope that you can message me and then I can address it on a later podcast that I screwed up your name.
Which, by the way, you can message us on the Patreon for patrons.
Yes.
So we see comments and stuff. We can chat back and forth on there. So please.
Please. Anyway, Avrid, this one's for you. Avrid was compelled to defend his decision and its aftermath.
Another mystery.
Mm.
The decision.
We don't know.
We know nothing. But Avrid,
and what the aftermath was, we will never know.
That's true. Avrid knows.
He knows.
And I know to thank Avrid for his support of Panning the Stream. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And to all our patrons, thank you so much.
To all of our patrons, all of our listeners, anyone who's ever dug out an episode of the show and listened to it, we hope you have enjoyed it. If you have enjoyed it, you can give us a 5-star podcast review on Apple Podcasts. Give us the old 5 stars. You gave me a little look as I almost misspoke.
Yeah, your face contorted.
Well, because I messed up the words in the order, but I think I got the train back on track.
No, yeah, it sounded totally fine.
Thanks. I pulled it off?
Yes.
Okay. You can follow us at Pan the Stream on Twitter if you would like to find out what we're watching before we watch it. Hey, we're both doing some video game streaming on twitch.tv/DanReichert. Mm. Bonk joins me for some stuff. We just did some Streets of Rage 4.
Yes, occasionally we do things together.
Yeah, and there's a lot of me streaming until 5 or 6 in the morning. So, yeah. I pull Bonk in whenever I can, and it's been fun.
It's been great.
Yes. So, thank you all for listening. We will see you all. Thanks to Tom Monda for the theme song that you're hearing right now. And we will see you all next week.
Who wants to live forever?
Not me.